Before I ever met you, Socrates, I used to hear of your bewilderment, that you were in the state and that you brought your hearers to the state along with you. And now I see your spell is cast on me, for I am all bewildered. If a joke is apt, I think that in the way you look and every other way you call to mind the broad torpedo fish, for, just like it, when one approaches you and gets too close and touches you, at once he goes all numb. Indeed, this is what you have done to me. My mind and tongue are numb, so that I have no answer left to give, despite the fact I have held forth on virtue fluently so many times before assembled crowds. My speeches, so I thought, were very good. But now I find, when asked what virtue is, I cannot say. I think that you are wise to stay in Athens, in another city. If you, a stranger, acted in this way, you'd be cast out for doing sorcery.
You rascal! You are trying to deceive me, Menno, and it nearly worked.
How so?
I know why you depicted me this way.
You do? Why did I?
So that I'd create an image of you correspondingly. All handsome men rejoice when they can see their likenesses, as well I think they should, for images of them are beautiful. However, I will not consent to draw an image for you. The torpedo fish, if it makes others numb by being numb, resembles me but doesn't otherwise. For when I baffle others, I don't have an answer. Rather, I am more perplexed than those in whom I cause perplexity. You see, I do not know what virtue is. Perhaps you knew before you spoke with me, but now you act like one who doesn't know. Despite all that, I want to work with you to learn what it may be.
How can you do this, Socrates, not knowing what it is? How do you plan to search for such a thing? Not knowing it at all, how will you know, on finding it, that it is what you seek?
Debaters make this kind of argument. A man can't search for anything he knows or anything he doesn't. If he knows, there is no need for searching. If he doesn't, how can he know what he is looking for?
Do you believe the argument is sound?
I don't. Why not? I'll tell you. I have heard wise men and women speak of the divine.
What did they say?
Their speech, I thought, was true and beautiful.
Who were they? What was said?
They were among the priests and priestesses, devoted to explaining what they do. This kind of speech appears in poetry by Pindar, and in other verse as well. I'll tell you what they say. See whether you agree with it. About the human soul, they say it is immortal, that at times it meets an end which we perceive as death, and that at other times it is reborn. But never does it perish, therefore one must live one's life with utmost piety. In 9 years shall Persephone release the souls of those from whom she will exact a punishment for ancient miseries, and from those souls a line of kings will come. Their strength and wisdom will be unsurpassed. Forever will men call them sacred heroes. The soul immortal has seen many births. It has seen all things in the underworld and here. So there is nothing which it has not learned. Thus we should hardly be surprised that it remembers everything it knew of virtue and of many other things. As nature is related to itself, and as the soul has learned of everything, a man can study anything he wants, and learn it and discover it himself, so long as he is diligent and does not tire, for learning is just recollection. We must therefore reject the argument made by debaters, lest it make us idle. The ones who heed it are the faint of heart. What I say has the opposite effect. It makes men energetic, keen to search. I think that this is true, and so I want to work with you to find what virtue is.
Yes, Socrates, I think we should do that. But what is this you said we do not learn? We call it learning, but it's recollection. Will you please teach me this? I want to know.
I said you were a rascal. I was right. You're asking me to teach you when I say there is no teaching, only recollection. I think that what you're asking is a trap to make me contradict myself.
By Zeus, that isn't what I had in mind at all. It's just a habit, Socrates. If you can show me that these things are as you say, please do it.
I do not believe it's easy. For your sake, though, I'll do the best I can. Tell one of your attendants to come here, whichever one you like, so I may prove the truth of what I say concerning him.
Of course. You there, come here.
Is he a Greek? Does he speak Greek?
He does indeed. He's from my household. He was born and brought up there.
Then pay attention. See whether you think he's recollecting what he learns from me.
I'll pay attention.
Tell me, boy, you know this figure that I've drawn here is a square?
I do.
And it's a square because its sides are equal?
Yes, indeed.
And if we draw these lines bisecting it, they're also equal?
That's right.
And such a figure could be larger or smaller?
Certainly.
And if this side were 2 feet long, as were this other side, how many feet would lie inside the hole? Consider this. If this way had 2 feet, and that way had but one, the figure would be once 2 feet in size?
Yes, I agree.
But if that way were also 2 feet long, the size would be twice two?
I think it would.
How many feet is that? Would you compute the answer, please, and tell me what it is?
4, Socrates.
Consider now a figure that's twice the size of this one, with its sides all equal, as the sides of this one are. How many feet will lie inside that figure?
8 feet.
Now try to say how many feet are in each side of that one. This one has 2 feet on either side. What of that one whose size is twice as big?
Well, Socrates, it's obvious each will be twice as long.
See, Menno, I don't teach the boy a thing. I question him, and now he thinks he knows the side length of a square that's twice as large. Do you agree?
I do.
And does he know?
Of course he doesn't.
He says twice as long.
He does.
Now watch him recollect the things that one must recollect. Boy, do you say a figure twice as large must have a side that's twice the length? I mean a square like this, not long on one side, shorter on the other, but equal on all sides, as this one is, and twice as large, that is, an 8-foot square. Do you persist in thinking that its side is twice as long?
I do.
Now if we add another line of equal measure here, its length increases so it's twice as long?
It does.
And if each side is just that long, the square that they surround will have 8 feet?
It will.
Well, let us draw a square like that. You say this figure is an 8-foot square?
I do.
Inside this figure are 4 squares, each equal to the 4-foot square.
That's true.
How big is this one? Is it not 4 times as big?
It is.
So do you think this one is twice the size?
I don't think that, by Zeus.
What is the size comparison?
4 times.
Therefore, when we increase each side to twice its length, the square that we produce is not 2 times, but is 4 times as big.
That's right.
And 4 times 4 is 16, is it not?
It is.
So then, how should we draw a line to make an 8-foot square? With this line here, the square is 4 times bigger, is it not?
That's right.
Each side of this, the 4-foot square, is based on this line here at half the length?
It is.
All right. Now is the 8-foot square not twice the size of this and half of that?
That's true.
Therefore it must exceed this one in length, but must not be as long as that.
I think that's right.
Good. Answer what you think. Now this we said was 2 feet long, and that was 4 feet.
That we did.
So then the line that bounds the 8-foot square exceeds in length the 2-foot one, but yet is shorter than the line that has 4 feet.
That must be so.
So tell me then, how long must be this line?
3 feet.
All right, then let's increase each line by half. For here are 2 feet, adding 1 makes 3, and over here it is the same. To 2 we add the 1, and we have 3. With that our figure is as you suggest.
It is.
Now if it's 3 feet on this side and 3 on that, how large will be the hole? 3 feet times 3?
That's how it seems.
How much is 3 times 3?
9 feet.
How big was it? The double square, how many feet?
8 feet.
Therefore, the 3-foot side could not create the square we want.
It can't, apparently.
So how long should it be? Please be exact. Please give a number or a diagram.
By Zeus, I must admit I do not know.
See, Menno, how the recollection goes. It's clear he never knew how long it was, the side length of the 8-foot square. At first, he thought he knew and spoke as if he did. He didn't tell himself, I'm at a loss. But now he does think that. He doesn't know, nor does he think he knows.
I think that's true.
Has he proceeded to a better place regarding what he doesn't know?
He has.
And have we done him harm by making him perplexed and numb like the torpedo fish?
I'd say we haven't.
Rather, it would seem we've helped the course of knowledge, for he knows he doesn't know and wants to see the truth. before he may have thought that he could make fine speeches to large crowds, saying the square of double size has twice as long a side.
That seems to be the case.
And do you think he would have sought the answer that he thought he knew, but he did not, before he fell into bewilderment and thereby saw he didn't know, and therefore wished to know?
I don't think that he would have, Socrates.
Has numbing him then benefited him?
I think it has.
See now how he'll escape bewilderment by joining up with me and searching. I'll do nothing more than ask him questions. I won't teach him. See if you observe me teach or tell him anything. Instead of asking him, what do you think? Please tell me, is this not a 4-foot square? You understand?
I do.
We add to it the figure which is equal to it.
Yes.
We add this third one, which again is equal.
Yes.
What is left here is a corner space which we can fill.
We can.
So here we have 4 equal figures.
Yes.
Please tell me now, how many times does this large square exceed in size each of the smaller squares?
4 times.
The square we wanted was but twice as large. Or do you not remember?
Yes, I do.
What of this line that starts here at one corner and goes to that one opposite? Does it not cut each of these smaller squares in 2?
It does.
So then 4 equal lines enclose this inner figure.
Yes.
Consider now, how big is it, this inner figure here?
I do not understand.
In each of these 4 squares, each line bisects it, does it not?
It does.
How many 4-foot squares are here?
4 squares.
How many 4-foot squares are in the inner figure?
2.
How do we say that 4 relates to 2?
We say it's double.
How many feet are in the inner square?
8 feet.
What is the line that forms its side?
This one.
That is, the line that goes from here, one corner of the 4-foot square, to there, the other corner?
Yes.
The clever men refer to it as the diagonal. Now, knowing that this is its name, do you believe the side length of the double square? Is this the line which is diagonal?
Yes, Socrates, I think exactly that.
What say you, Meno? Has he in his answers said anything that was not his opinion?
No, everything he said was what he thought.
And yet, not long ago, he did not know?
That's true.
So the opinions that he had were in him all along, or were they not?
They were.
Therefore, the man who does not know has true opinions in himself of things he does not know.
That is how it appears.
We saw the boy's opinions were stirred up as in a dream, and what if he were asked repeatedly of them? Do you believe that in the end his knowledge of these things would be as accurate as anyone's?
That's likely.
And this boy won't have been taught, but only questioned, and this boy will find the knowledge in himself.
He will.
And is not finding knowledge, that is, in oneself, a kind of recollection?
Certainly.
Consider what that knowledge is. He must at some time have acquired it, or else have always had it.
Yes.
And in the case he always had it, he'd always have known. If he obtained it, on the other hand, he didn't do that in his current life. Or has someone taught him geometry? Regardless, what he'll do is just the same in any subject, in geometry, or any other one. Has someone taught him everything? That's something you should know, as he was born and brought up in your house.
I know no one has taught him.
Yet he has the opinions that we've seen, or doesn't he?
I do not doubt he has them, Socrates.
If they are not a product of this life, he must have learned them at some other time.
That seems to be the case.
When was that time? When he was not a human being?
Yes.
Then if, when he exists and he is not a human being, he has true opinions, and these opinions, stirred by questioning, turn into knowledge, is it not the case? His soul will have been learning all this time. For clearly, all this time he must exist, as man or in some other way.
That's true.
And if the truth about reality is always in our soul, which is immortal, then you should not give up. Instead, should seek to recollect whatever you don't know, that is, what you have not yet recollected.
Yes, Socrates, I think that is correct.
I also think so, Meno. I don't claim my arguments are uniformly right. At all costs, though, I do believe in this, in word and deed, as much as I am able. We're better men, we're braver and less idle. If we believe in searching for the things we do not know, instead of doubting we can find what we don't know, so that we should not look for it.
In this I also think you, Socrates, are right.
Thus we agree that one should strive to find what isn't known. Therefore, shall we join forces and attempt to find what virtue is?
I think we should. But, Socrates, I'm waiting still to hear the answer to my question from before. Is virtue something teachable? Is it a natural gift? How does it come to men?
If I directed our discussion, Menno, I'd say let's not investigate this question. Is virtue teachable before we know what virtue is itself? But you don't seek to regulate yourself and thus be free. Instead, you want to rule me, and you do. Therefore, I'll go along with you, for what can I do otherwise? It seems we must investigate a thing we do not know by nature, seeking out its qualities. I'll ask you this, however. Please relax the rule that you've propounded and agree to using a hypothesis as we determine whether virtue can be taught. By this I mean the way geometers pursue investigations. For example, if asked, here is an area and here a circle, is it possible to find a triangle inscribed inside the circle that has that area? A geometer might say, I do not know if that is true. I have, however, a hypothesis that seems to be of service to this problem. Inscribe a square inside the circle. Now, suppose the given area not more than half that of the square. Then in this case, I'd say that what you asked is possible, and otherwise it isn't. So the answer depends on whether this condition holds. Let's speak in just this way concerning virtue. We don't know what it is, what qualities it has. Therefore, let us investigate our question, whether virtue can be taught by using a hypothesis like this. Of all things that are present in the soul, what kind of thing is virtue? Do we think it is a kind of thing that can be taught? Let's first assume that virtue isn't knowledge. In this case, is it teachable? If so, it must be able to be recollected. Let's not distinguish now between these terms, to teach or recollect. Or is it clear that knowledge is alone what can be taught?
I think it is.
If virtue is a form of knowledge, then, it's clear it could be taught.
Of course.
We ascertain that rapidly, that if it's of one kind, it can be taught, while of another kind, that it cannot.
We have indeed.
The next point to take up, it seems to me, is this. Is virtue knowledge or something else?
I also think that this is what we should consider next.
Well now, do we proclaim that virtue in itself is something good? Will this hypothesis stand up for us that virtue is a good?
Of course it will.
If there is anything that's good and also separate from knowledge, it's possible that virtue is that thing. But if there's nothing like this, nothing good, outside the realm of knowledge, we'd be right to think that virtue lies inside that realm.
That's so.
Does virtue make us good?
It does.
And if we're good, then we bestow a good, for all that's good provides a benefit. Is that not so?
It is.
And therefore virtue is beneficial?
Yes, I think that follows from all that we have said.
Then let's examine what things bestow a benefit on us. Let's take them one by one, starting with health. That's one, then strength and beauty, also wealth. We say these things and other things like these are beneficial to us, do we not?
We do.
But then we also say these things can harm us sometimes too. Do you agree?
I do.
Then let us ask what in each case determines whether benefit or harm occurs to us when we possess these things. Does not the proper use of them create a benefit while misuse causes harm?
That's true.
Look now upon the qualities inherent in the soul. There's something we call moderation, something we call justice, intelligence and generosity, and memory and other things like that.
There are.
Consider which of these you think is different from knowledge. Do they not sometimes cause harm, sometimes a benefit? Take courage, for example. There are times that courage is a form of recklessness, not wisdom. When a man impulsively reacts in ways he does not understand, he's harmed, whereas he'd gain a benefit from action based on understanding.
Yes.
With moderation and acuity, the same is true. When they are taken up and used with discipline and understanding, they bring a benefit, but using them unwisely causes harm.
I think that's so.
So we must say that if the soul takes up a thing, and doing this it guides itself with wisdom, happiness is the result. But if the path it treads is ignorance, the opposite occurs.
Yes, that is likely.
Therefore, if virtue is an attribute that's found within the soul, and if it brings a universal benefit, it must be knowledge, since the qualities we find inside the soul are neither in themselves. a cause for harm or a cause for benefit. Instead, they give a benefit when they are paired with wisdom, while when they are paired with foolishness, the opposite occurs. The argument we've made establishes that virtue, which must give a benefit, must be a kind of wisdom.
I agree.
Moreover, as to other things that we discussed just now, wealth, for example, these are sometimes good, while sometimes they cause harm. We said as to the other qualities found in the soul, if wisdom is the guide, then they are beneficial, whereas harm results when folly leads. So in the case of wealth and other things, a benefit results when they are used the proper way, while use that's incorrect will cause us harm.
That's right.
The soul that's wise directs good use. The soul that's foolish does the opposite.
Yes, I agree.
Therefore, let us say this. All human acts depend upon the soul. The soul itself needs wisdom to direct those acts so that they give a benefit. According to this argument, what gives a benefit is wisdom, and we say that virtue gives a benefit.
We do.
So virtue must, in whole or part, be wisdom?
Yes, Socrates, that statement seems correct.
If that is so, it must not be the case. Good men are good by nature.
No, they're not.
For if they were, then things would be like this. Men would exist who knew which of the young were good by nature. Those they pointed out we'd set aside in the Acropolis. We'd guard them vigilantly, more than gold, preventing them from seeing anyone who might corrupt them, so that when they reached adulthood, they'd confer a benefit upon their cities.
That sounds right to me.
If it is not the case that men are good by nature, can they learn and thus be good?
I think so, Socrates, for we have said that virtue is a kind of knowledge, so it seems it can be taught.
Perhaps, by Zeus. However, could it be that we have erred in reaching this conclusion?
It seemed right when we concluded it.
If it is sound, it must be right not then alone, but now and always in the future.
What is wrong? What's causing you to doubt the claim we made before that virtue is a kind of knowledge?